The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday.
Is it the 30th yet?
It is the 30th. September 30th.
And you think after the two moons can change the calendar? I ain't sure. That's why I invited these people.
I saw two moons and I believe something spiritual is happening. But I think it's some type of Earth is shifting. And this is where I'm going to have my conversation about these climate change experts, whether something is happening on this planet that we need to be concerned with, whether we should be concerned about protecting the climate, because I believe in conspiracy theories, right? And before I get to all of that, right, so they can explain things better to me, because I am this conspiracy theorist, right? I want to welcome everyone to the show, Guardian Radio AM. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the day, and we're going to have a conversation about climate change. We have continued the conversation from with Erin Green with On the Clock, mm-hmm. Where we have two distinguished guests. From which department are you from, Doctor? Again.
Oh boy. OPM's Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit. See, I put this on Yuri like when them tornado, when them water spouted is just pop up out of nowhere. I want to give him the real climate change effect. Mm-hmm. Right? But of course we are now in the Guardian Radio AM with CA Yuri Hour. He's been gracious enough to allow us to extend the conversation into his hour. And with Newry's location in the country as a social commentator, a genealogist, as a family tree boy, he's built family trees, and as a cultural commentator, I want your perspective in the conversation, right? Like you say, I bougie and I live up on a hill. I don't know about things. And so I'd also like you to join us in the conversation. Again, we're talking to representatives from the Office of the Prime Minister's Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit. We have been discussing a new project called a Caribbean Net Zero and Resilient Private Sector. This project provides opportunities for private sector entities to engage funding up to $500 million, granted, pun intended, that funding is to be shared with other countries in the region, but does not bar entities from various jurisdictions working together, right? And the aim is to achieve a net zero and resilient private sector where we are balancing the amount of carbon emissions we produce with the amount of carbon emissions we are able to remove from the atmosphere, or alternatively prevent from entering the atmosphere by changing our traditional business strategies and operational practices and introducing new technology, new practices, and new cultures into both the business sector, the private sector, and more importantly, into the thinking of members of society.
And we couldn't have said it any better, Erin. That was a great summary.
Thank you.
We just want to make sure to give people the contact information.
Again, yeah.
So, like I said, it's being facilitated through the IDB, the country office here in the Bahamas. And that number again is 396-7800. And then, of course, as a good government, we want to ensure that our people are being facilitated in this project offering. So anybody that's reaching out to them, we would ask that you would also send us an email at cceau@bahamas.gov.bs. And our phone number is 702 702- 5500. And when you email us, what we would really appreciate is if you would send us your name, your phone contact, your email address, which we know we will be getting an email, but you know, it's easier just to cut and paste that to establish a stakeholder listing, and the area that you are seeking to facilitate through this $500 million offering, right? So that when we now get with our IDB colleagues and we were like, well, how many people did you receive? How many people came out to you? And they were like, well, 20. Well, I'd be like, well, we get 50 people who can send us an email and we can turn that information over to them. And then yet again, we want to say that we will be hosting a workshop or a public consultation process with the IDB in play so that people could come in and have their questions answered and be very, very clear on what is expected in terms of the application process.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, let's get to the text, Mr. Nuri. You got a ton of texts that came in. The first text of the morning was this. Aaron, I have one question for your guests. Is the percentage of emissions humans produce on the Earth 0.04%? Also, has anyone been able to control the climate? Yes. But I swear my Grammy is practicing over here. Anytime I tell her I won't go out to town, it rains. It was her, she did it. If so, how and who? Also, does burning down the forest and trees affect the climate? Another text, morning, Aaron. Is the policy of the unit global? Who wrote the policy that the unit operates under? What part, if any, did your guests play in creating policy? Or are they only responsible for the implementation of the policy? I'm asking because they are part of the founding of the unit. Thank you. Dear Texter, I would like to have the unit on in another capacity to discuss more broadly how the unit was founded, the models that may have been used to create, right, a model for the Bahamas, and then we talk about broader issues with that. But there are some good questions there as well, especially to what extent are we capitalizing on the expertise of our local actors to build, I don't want to say sovereign because that's too loaded, but to build local solutions and mechanisms. Another text, the harsh reality of global warming is that world leaders often prioritize economic interests over urgent action. Many leaders avoid confronting the scale of action needed. Short political cycles, misinformation, and reluctance to make difficult choices hinder meaningful change. And I think, Texter, that sentiment has driven, right, this project. Again, Ms. Newbold indicated at the beginning of the discussion that as a policy matter, this project not only focuses on private sector resilience and decarbonizing operations, but it creates an environment where individuals can interact with the IDB, non-governmental, but still rely on support from the unit in the office of the Prime Minister to ensure that they are being considered equitably in this non-governmental process. Nuri?
I see we have a quality here. Mm-hmm. And Aaron mentioned, at least a texter mentioned misinformation. And remember, I mentioned earlier I'm a conspiracy theorist, right? Mm-hmm. How does your unit dispel misinformation, because a number of behemoths just don't understand climate change and everything. So how do you go about it to make sure that we're educated and say, no, this information is wrong. This is the right information.
I think part of it is us coming on the shows, right? We're really open to being able to engage and to talk with the behemoth people and to talk with people at where they're at. We believe that honestly, conspiracy theories are based because there's cynicism or a lack of trust in power systems that exist, right? And so in being able to say, hey, I hear where you're cynical. I hear why you don't trust this. And I understand that these are areas where government or in other, you know, systems of power failed. But here's what we're actually doing, right? And that we cannot allow our cynicism or our distrust in how things may have done in the past to prevent us from accessing opportunities, finances, and solutions for the future. And so I mean, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And so for the amount of people that we can manage in our one-on-one engagement, coming on the radio, going online, holding conferences, trying to just talk really one-to-one to you. We all Bahamians, right? We all believe that this island is our home. I want to move from here. I know that I want the country to be clean. I want the country to be vibrant. I want us to not just survive, but thrive. And how can we leverage the climate change space to address those issues? And that's how we begin to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's have this caller engage you. Mm-hmm. And another conspiracy theory, and forgive me, Ms. Newbo, like I said, I started off because he was a theorist person. I've heard that talk of that in 100 years, the Bahamas will be submerged by water. Have any of you heard that by Bahamians, again, pushing back against your all of your activities and your knowledge-based information, and they're coming up with these wild accusations?
Let's go to the caller, and when we come back from the caller, again, that's why I bring them here to find out if the two moons is responsible for, because the moon affects the tide. If it's two moons, it's problems. Good morning, caller. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Aaron.
How you do?
Good morning, Mr. Neary.
Morning. How are you doing?
And good morning to your guests. I have a question, right? I'm hearing a lot about this climate change and all these other stuff that they're talking about, right? And I do believe in it because I think I've seen differences from the time I was a child to now, especially with this outrageous heat. But what I want to know is the prime minister, I guess, along with them, are all over the world talking about this. What is it? Where's the conversation for us here at home? Where can we go to see our prime minister talk about this the way he does on the world stage? Or we're going to wait until the sea level reaches to our doorstep, and then we can hear, get on the boat, or swim or sink.
Thank you for the question, dear cousin, because it sounds like you say if the prime minister can wait for us all have to move on top of Mount Alvernia to live together with him before he addresses the matter. But I don't think it could take that long. And so here's a question I want to ask. Does the unit have a website? Does the unit document and archive the prime minister's engagements, climate change engagements, both locally and internationally, so that the average man could just like go to the OPM and click a link, and these are all of the OPM, the prime minister's statement on the on the OPM's website.
Yeah, okay. Everything's there. He's ever said is there, that he said internationally, that he said locally, when he's spoken on behalf of SIDS or the country, it's there.
Okay, so here's another question. As an NGO, say I'm a civil society actor, got a little community or climate-based organization, could I invite the unit, the Climate Change Advisory Unit, to engage in a project to present the OPM, the Prime Minister's statements in a organized fashion for an audience? So like the caller said, hey, I hear the Prime Minister talking all the time, but I ain't quite sure what he's saying, and I'm not sure if he's speaking to me. But my organization, we're going to have a night, a climate change night, and I could invite the unit to come in. We identify statements and key points of the statements. And so to be presented to people, say, hey, this is what the prime minister is actually saying.
Okay, so two things there. One, the unit has engaged in social interactions with groups like our church groups, our civil society groups, okay, organizations. And we've gone. I've spoken at Rotary, Toastmasters, my church. I've done a lot. So has Mr. Hamilton. So has other members of our group.
And so an MP could invite you to a constituency meeting. We open it up on the park.
Too. Yeah.
Good stuff.
So
it
isn't as if this is not happening, right? Mm-hmm. I think being a conspiracist myself with the public, I just think Bahamians sometimes, you put things out there, but they're busy about their lives and trying to get their things done. That it goes over their head or under the radar, and they don't see it. And then you're sitting in a room, and you're like, where's everybody? I thought they wanted to talk to us, and they didn't show up.
And then sometimes we don't understand the technology, like that boy, the diddler, Sean Combs. I hear you don't like anybody calling him Sean Combs. He has inundated social media pages for weeks now, right? And that literally drowns out other news. So even though the unit may be paying for social media placement, that could easily get drowned out by Putin's internet.
Yeah. Oh, but let me say what my colleague here said about the 100 years of the Bahamas. And I say to myself, 100 years? Our Pacific colleagues are experiencing it right now. Anybody could just go on Google and say, what Pacific island is already being inundated? Tuvalu is vanishing as the people live right up and now.
How do you pronounce it? Palau?
Tuvalu.
No. The other name, I know Tuvalu.
Palau,
because it made me think of rice just now. We love y'all. Micronesia, the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, Nauru.
Yes, Nauru. All of Nauru. These guys are facing what we're saying. We're trying to prepare ourselves and get ourselves ready to face, hopefully by one, trying to slow this whole process down, get into the international environment, or develop partners who are emitting all of these things and ratcheting up these temperatures, trying to get them to put the brakes on that, to try to do what, call them out about what they're supposed to do. Like Mr. Hamilton said, when we start looking at the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, so after you done asked your neighbor a million times to deal with that matter on their land and they're not dealing with it, then the only other recourse is to make it an illegal issue. So now small island states are making it a legal issue. And I can let Mr. Hamilton talk more about that.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I just before I like segue into that, I was at an event where a person from Tuvalu were showing a map of their country right now, one of the islands, because they've managed to map out all of their islands. They're not as big as us, so that cost isn't the same. And they showed us what their island would look like with sea level rise projections. And I'm looking at the pictures, and all you see is red. Their airport gone, their power company gone, their agricultural land gone, these historical buildings gone. And they then showed where they ended up reclaiming some land on the beaches, and it helped to slow down some of that loss. But they said that this is just a slowing down process. This isn't something that's going to stop it. We need our global partners in order to move. And so for those who want to know what the Prime Minister is doing, I'll just go into Google, type up OPM, Prime Minister Speech Archives. They're all on there. The minute he speaks, they normally go live within 15 minutes after he speaks. So you can be able to see where he's been talking locally and internationally. And in terms of what we've been doing as well, we realize that we're doing our part. We're showing how we're trying to develop solutions in country, whether it's changing tax structures or trying to get this finance to help private sector. But we also see that our developed country partners are not doing their part. And so the Bahamas, as a part of the Commission of Small Island States and International Law, COSIS, actually joined in with 9 other small island developing states to ask an advisory opinion from the International Tribunal for the Laws of the Sea. And we specifically wanted to ask this international tribunal, are countries not doing their part? Or what specific obligations do parties to UNCLOS have in preventing greenhouse gas pollution? And in short, 9 small little countries, the Bahamas included, successfully brought this case forward, which ruled that greenhouse gas emissions, carbon dioxide, methane, etc., can be considered a sea pollutant under the UN Convention for the Law of the Seas. And this historic ruling obliges countries to mitigate their effects in the oceans and creates further opportunities for future climate law and litigation to be carried out. And so it also includes implications that say that countries who fail to meet their obligations to reduce marine greenhouse gas pollution could potentially be liable for claims. And so now the Bahamas, 9 little islands, brought this thing forward to this UN tribunal. Fast forward, you have the International Court of Justice, which is we, along with 88 other countries, are asking the International Court of Justice, can you please ask us, can you please give us your opinion on what obligations do states have under international law to protect the climate system. The Bahamas has had one of the most, like, significant briefs that have been submitted. And we're now responding to other countries who have submitted their briefs to then have a public hearing on this particular matter. And we strongly believe that from the International Tribunal opinion we got, it will positively impact this ICJ opinion, because it's clear that we just can't depend on good faith actors to do their work. But we also have to do that part. So it isn't just talk. It's about trying to find actions and find what levers you can pull on to help the Bahamian people.
Okay. So going back to the text line, I've just read about 5 different texts that have said, and I'm going to read this one because they all say the same thing. Can you ask your guests what impact the cutting down of trees to make coal has on climate change? This one says it's big business in Eleuthera. So here's the question I want to put to you. This is the 4th texter that has intimated or attempted to suggest, wants the audience to infer, that perhaps illegal migrants, I can say just like y'all want me to say, illegal migrants making coal in the forest is impacting climate change greatly, right? So here's what I want to ask you guys. Let's compare the production of coal to the proliferation of motor vehicles, to the proliferation of marine vehicles, and the tourism industry, right? So is coal production having a greater negative impact than the vast amount of cars that we use and the transportation system we use for Bahamians generally, tourism and the cruise ships and airplanes that are flying over, and the vast amounts of air conditioning that we produce per year? Which has a greater impact? The burning of the coal, or tourism, or transportation?
It's a big question, by the way.
So when you look at each one of these components, right, the burning of the coal has several knock-on impacts, not just climate change. Mm-hmm. The minute you cut down a tree, that means you change the ecosystem that tree was contributing to. Mm-hmm. Whatever bird life was utilizing it, whatever contribution it was putting into the physical environment, whatever food it might have been providing for those that are around it, there are a series of impacts coming with that.
Cutting
right?
down
and
tree.
You're getting what? One coal?
One grill session.
Mm-hmm. Right? So from the Bahamas' point of view, to cut down a tree has the implications of a loss of food, biodiversity decreases, and an escalation in land-based temperature, which then affects the agricultural soil and the integrity of the ground to continue to do what it is, because now where that shade was is no longer a shade. And we're getting the sun, like you say, getting dead hot, mm-hmm. and the sun just beating down and beating down. My whole issue with this thing...
And soil erosion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My whole issue with this thing is, if it is an illegal activity, why is it being allowed to proliferate in your community? You, as a member of that community, will have the egregious impacts that are associated with this illegal activity. So the people in that community need to have the matter addressed. I really do not believe that the government is the begin-all and end-all of my life. If I see my neighbor doing something that's illegal, I'm going to go to my neighbor and, wait, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing that? I mean, actually, I did do this once. My neighbor used to catch raccoons and put them in a cage. And this one time, a pack of dogs just came and tore the poor animal to pieces. I cried. I was mm-hmm. so disturbed by that. And I addressed it and I talked to my neighbor. And my neighbor was a reasonable person and they stopped, right? Why aren't we communicating with one another as if we can't speak the same language? We're all going to benefit if the environment and the integrity of the processes that it lends is able to contribute, right? Mm-hmm. So if you find that these sort of things are happening in your community, take the proper recourse to have it addressed, because you will be impacted by it.
Absolutely.
Producer, I see we have another caller there, producer, if you could pass that through.
And then let's go to a break after the call. Yeah. When we come back from the break, more tasks. Text, contact information, and then the 2 moons, please and thank you. I mean, there's Saharan Dust, there's Hurricane Helene, there's Hurricane Joyce and Isaac. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Mr. Nuri. Good morning to your guests. Thank you for continuing this thing. Listen, C.A. Nuri.
Yeah, I'm here.
Just as it was in the beginning, it should be in the end. So we was underwater, and that's what it will be. You know, that's what they told me, right?
You but watch Waterworld with Mel Gibson. That's what happened.
Yeah, but hold on, I'm going to get this in quickly.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry for even thinking it, because maybe we should hire the Wiz Kid, who's on 60 Minutes at the age of, say, 14 and 15, 16, trying to get his PhD in math, right? Trying to cram everything down his brain in a competition for I don't know what. But too much studying varies the flesh. But I'll get on with this. Infrared spatial technology is what they use to determine the parts per million in the atmosphere. But you remember now, you could go and read the advantages and disadvantages, the inaccuracy of using infrared spatial technology. But it's that spatial, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the text is 0.04 ppm, which would be the 400 parts per million. That they're saying the Earth is maybe about 4 or 3 parts per million. Now, the question becomes for me, a thinking mind, I'm sorry, we know about isotopes. Aaron had asked me the question. I'd said it over and over on the radio. So the question, out of this 400 parts per million, did a text who texted, right? How much of this is anthropogenic versus what God gave me and you? Carboniferous. And so the people that really are right about burning, of course, even when the forest catch a fire.
Mm-hmm. We lost you there, 52. Thank you for answering that question. And thank you for engaging again.
You want to take a break now and then you come back?
Yeah, because I tell you why. Mm-hmm. Today is September 30th. This is the last day in September. Don't forget, get down to HitSpot on Soldier Road. HitSpot on Soldier Road is providing band installation, band extender equipment, and installation for the price of $79.99. That's VAT included. So you could continue to listen to The Guardian news, music, radio, jokes, when you jump in your car safely and secure your phone where it's supposed to be. So you guys get down to HitSpot. Today is the last day. Tell them The Guardian sent you so you could stay connected. We will be right back. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri will return.
Jump into a Japanese import and you turn the radio on. All you hear is... For the month of September, the HitSpot will install a band extender in your Japanese import for the discounted rate of only $79.99, VAT included. Get your band expander installed today at the HitSpot and listen to...
Star 106.5.
Plus, get fresh news and smart talk on...
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We have a number of texts I need Aaron to read. And I was talking in the break to Dr. Hamilton and Ms. Newbold about successes of the unit and successes of the whole program. I want us to give some detail about that too. Mm-hmm. So the Bahamian people could say, okay, this is not just talk. We are making movements. We have made some gains. I want us to at least mention that too.
And the two moons. So I know y'all think I just being wild. I know y'all expect to hear Eddie Minnis song right now about Granny flying and UFO. But the question is the mini moon, mm-hmm. aka two moons, a result of climate change? From the article from the BBC, that's the British Broadcasting Corporation, not the Bernadette B. and the Bush Talking Foolishness Corporation. Earth to briefly gain second moon, scientists say. A small asteroid is going to be captured by Earth's gravitational pull and temporarily become a mini moon. This space visitor will be around from September 29th for a couple of months until roughly predicted to leave on November 25th. Mm-hmm. And so the question was, is this climate change, right? But I think this is planetary shift. Like the planet said, I'm tired of you, moon. Every time I turn around, you right there next to me. I want a new friend for a couple of days. Does he get on my nerves?
No, that's got nothing to do with climate change. This is an asteroid that was out there. We just saw it in August. The scientists just saw it in August. And don't forget, on the outer extent of our galaxy, a galaxy is an asteroid belt. And sometimes these, for whatever, they collide in one another, they throw each other off, and then they spin down. And this one just happened to come our way. Remember we also had a one a couple months ago or sometime last year where they thought it would have blown up half the planet and stuff like that. So
so it's not this one that is called 2024 PTS. Mm-hmm. In 2022, we had 2022 NX1 asteroid. It became a mini moon in 1981 and again in 2022. And they say that 2024 PT5 will visit us again in 2055. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you why. Because they pass by the Bahamas.
Yay.
They have to come back. We have proven the slogan. Right? So it's not a new moon, but it will look like a new moon if you are lucky enough to see it. And I say that because scientists say that it is so small. And it is dull, right? They say it's like a small, dull rock, but some of the best men seem dull at first. You shine them up, they sweet and awesome. Anyway.
You want to squeeze the caller in or are we going to
text? Yeah, we can go to the caller.
Okay, producer Pratchett, the caller through. Are you going to text next or are you going to have them speak about the accomplishments?
Well, I want to get these texts in. It's 11:39, so let's go to the accomplishments first and then we get back to the text.
Okay. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us?
Caller, you still there?
Yes, I am. Could you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Alan Johnson. I guess just a couple of points. I think your guest in the studio began to address it, and you talked about the what is worse. And I was going to ask you the same question. I don't know what is worse: me shooting you in the hands or shooting you in the chest.
The hands, not the leg, and not the chest.
I'm saying, how about just not being shot? That's when you talk about not cutting down the trees. It's something called a butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, cutting down a tree in the Bahamas impacts Jamaica and the rest of the Caribbean and the rest of the world. So, and that's what we have to think of. Also, for the fact that I think your guests also, I didn't want to say minimize the impact of methane, but methane is part of what we call the dangerous climate feedback loop, which then also produces carbon dioxide. And that, which brings me to my final question. My question is this, is where can we find information concerning data very specific to the Bahamas in regards to climate change and global warming, sea rise, everything, and our strategies from a government standpoint, policies, whatever, on what they intend to address it? Because generally speaking, we hear people say, this is what I'm telling you we're doing. Now, there's some people amongst us, I believe, that has the ability to look at data, look at information, look at reports, look at these different things, look at policy written, policy positions, and be able to maybe contribute for it. I have to say, just contribute on what I say. And I'm saying, where's that flashpoint for access to data, whether it's provided by localized data collected or from an international perspective, so that we can participate, like I think you called in your last session, say, where can we participate in this besides telling us you could do this, you reimagine this, and all these different things. Thank you so much.
Thank you, C. Allen.
Okay. Thanks a lot, C. Allen. I think, as you know, there's a lot of acronyms that get thrown around in the climate change space, and so I want to make this as like easy for the Bahamian people to access. If you want to know what the Bahamas has been doing or communicating, what our data or plans are related to climate change, go on Google or Bing or whatever you use and type up NDC Bahamas 2022. That is the latest climate action plan that the Bahamas has communicated to the world on what we wish to do.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, there's two other documents that, again, in Google, Bing, Microsoft, Yahoo, whatever you use, type up BUR 2022 Bahamas. And a last one that you can pull up, because it's been a recent publication, is you can type up Third National Communication Bahamas. These documents are vast. We're talking about 500, 600 pages of information covering many different aspects of climate change, data, and what we plan to do.
Okay, so second question first. Can I access the project, the Net Zero and Resilient Private Sector Project funding, to create an entity simply to collate and disseminate this information, even though it's not necessarily a decarbonizing operation? And then first question, second, what does NDC mean? Mm-hmm. What does BUR mean?
Mm-hmm. So as part of the project works, I don't think so, because the fact is, as Mr. Hamilton, he just went to the heart of the matter, just indicating the documentation that's already out there. Mm-hmm. But we had a recent piece of legislation that was passed last year, 2023, where the National Emission Registry was created. That agency, that unit, has the responsibility of tracking our emissions and tracking what we are doing to ensure that we are meeting our goals and that we are reducing our emissions. So we already know what is the plan, the next 30-year plan, what are we trying to address, what sort of programs we're going to put in place to help bring the Bahamian public along with this new adaptive technology age. So that's already something that's in government. So I don't think that will be part of the private sector offering.
But to an earlier caller or texter, the National Emissions Agency, created through legislation, is another element in this climate change mm-hmm. environment, mm-hmm. right? That you can use to organize your own programming or to better understand what's happening at the national level, the regional level, and the global level.
Yes. And I also want to go back. Bahamians, be very clear on what I'm saying. We're not minimizing methane. We understand that methane is a very reactive GHG, greenhouse gas. What we are saying is we have an agreement globally to address CO2. Mm-hmm. Why would I be trying to go and harass other countries about doing their best to reduce their methane when we don't have an agreement with them on methane? We have an agreement with them on CO2. So I go to them and I say, listen, you promise to reduce your CO2 emissions by 30%, by 50%, by 60%, by 2050. What's going on? Why aren't you doing that yet? So mm-hmm. we understand its importance, but we want to put the fight where we know we can win.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Hamilton?
Yes, and to answer this as well, because we have an agreement focused on carbon dioxide, there's ways to say, you know what, there's a carbon dioxide equivalent that mm-hmm. methane might apply to. And so for us, we know what we've agreed to, and the next step is to address methane and these non-CO2 gases. Mm-hmm. So believe me, that's coming.
Right. So like when the country says, oh, we're trying very hard, but we don't know how to reduce the carbon dioxide, you could say, look here, you tried looking at methane. Mm-hmm. You thought, just think about methane for a little bit, and you'll figure out how to reduce the carbon dioxide.
Exactly.
All right, let's go to the phone line.
Yes, we have another phone line there. Go ahead, Carl. I can hear it.
Yes, 30 seconds, please.
Yes, sir.
I'm asking for data. Like, say, for instance, I'm on Grand Bahama. I want information specific to Grand Bahama, not communication that is going on. In fact, it incorporates all the impact. Yes, we are advocating from a global standpoint against CO2, but all of the contributory factors that we have in the Bahamas, and how do we address them? What are the numbers? Where are they coming from? Where's the data? How is Grand Bahama affected? How is Abaco affected? How is Long Island affected? These are data so that we don't just talk about the Bahamas in general, but talk very specifically to action that we could take for those communities. Thank you. Not just reports, data. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you, C. Allen.
I completely get what C. Allen is saying, right? There's definitely work being done to try and develop more island-specific repository of data. That is something that's been communicated in those reports. However, the citations within that report also point to primary data sources of including there were some vulnerability assessments that were done by the DRA in mapping out hazards for different islands, yeah. And it's in the report. That's why I pointed to the report, because the report has a annex with all of the sources of data.
And that's why I'm trying to find funding now so I could create an entity to collate mm-hmm. all of this information so it's more easily accessible mm-hmm. by entities that would want to participate in the Caribbean Net Zero and Resilient Private Sector Project.
Mm-hmm. What's the contact for that again?
The contact for that is right here, madam. The IDB Country Office is 396-7800. And to contact the Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit directly, which you should do, they're advising that you should do to supplement your submission to the IDB. You can contact them at 702-5500 or cceau@bahamas.gov.bs. Absolutely. So now let's go to the text line. This one is a bit off topic but important. The Road Traffic Department wishes to advise members of the public that representatives from the agency will be visiting Cat Island today, 30th of September to the 7th of October, 2024. Specifically, the representatives will be in the following settlements: Orange Creek, October 1st to October 2nd, New Bight, October 3rd to October 4th. Again, they're going to start in Orange Creek, the 1st to the 2nd of October, New Bight, 3rd to the 4th of October. Be prepared. They come into you. Have all your questions. Okay. Another text. Good morning. While the PM is going around the world talking about climate change, and he sounds great, his speechwriters are doing an excellent job. However, we are not walking the talk at home. We have just in the last 2 years cut down the massive tree through Bank Lane. Thank you to I reading that because that did hurt my heart too. The massive tree at government publication cut the limestone on Yamacraw Beach opposite Rugby Drive, probably to allow people to walk into the water, avoiding the sharp rock. We see the balance of social and cultural needs with the environment. Cleaned all the foliage from the western end of Paradise Island, dredge Athol Island, removed the mangroves from southwest New Providence for new private housing development, etc. The texter. That, like Ms. Newbold said, feels to me, iterating her sentiments, that this is when we begin to focus on cultural impact and cultural shifts, and how do we shift our behavior as a part of the solution.
I wanted to ask, is there a wish list, like 5-year, 10-year wish list that in 5 years we want to accomplish this or move the Bahamas to this position? In 10 years we think we should be here. And is that if there is a list, where can I find that? Bahamians can find and say, okay, yeah, read this.
Yeah.
There isn't a wish list of sort, but there are projects and programs that are in place. So first and foremost, our carbon credit space. We know because of the needs of our developed partners to meet certain targets within their development scope of work, a global commitment, that they won't have technology that addresses all of their needs. So they're going to still have to be emitting greenhouse gases. But we in the country have a mechanism dealing with our seagrass, which is a natural biological sequester of it. Right? So that we will be able to diversify our economic baseline by offering carbon credits for these seagrass alternatives. Mm-hmm. But these are not, like, people be concerned, well, you're just giving them a pass to continue to do what they're doing. But that isn't how it works. In order for industries, like the car manufacturing industry, you already have an industry, the technology that produces a type of car.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't going to be able to switch that to something else tomorrow. You're going to need time. And in order to do that time, you're going to need, say, a 3-year phase or a 4-year phase. And that's where we come in with the carbon credits. We said we'll send you your 5-year carbon credits, but by year 2, your industry should have already changed out 25% of that technology. By year 4, it should be this amount of technology. And so,
right, so by the time we hit year 2.5, we could tell that you're just joking and we could withdraw.
Right.
Because you're not meeting the terms.
And we ain't getting you your money back. So just right. So you know.
Well, y'all don't ever make me prime minister, because I can tell you right now, you want carbon credits, don't be racist. Y'all think it's all about money, right? I can give it to you, but there's other stipulations involved. We shift culture, grow mangoes. You want payment carbon credits? Grow mangoes. Okay, yes. Another text there, morning. Are these holes in our roads a part of climate change? Because everywhere you go, there are holes all over. Well, early in the conversation, ma'am, you told me that sea level rise in a limestone environment, which is porous and spongy, will the sea level rise, but there's a potential that it will push the freshwater lands up as well, which means that water is closer to the surface, which means that we have an environment where potholes are more likely to occur.
Yeah, there's no running away from that. Climate change has a knock-on effect in various activities that we do in some way, form, or another. And I know a lot of people would say, well, hey, let's look at some different technology that will address our road paving. Given these differences, maybe the material we need to change, we've used asphalt, which is a hydrocarbon product for forever, right? And so here is the private sector opportunity right now. That's a decarbonizing option that they could look at.
Is this a decarbonizing operation? I'm going to switch my paper redeemable stamps to a digital online point system. Could I call that a decarbonizing operation where I'm trying to reduce my paper use and I'm using a digital mechanism to provide the same service?
Then I guess it would be a matter of scale. See, because for the food store to do that, it's a process already in play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't come ask me for, you know, venture capital.
Okay.
Because you're already doing something about this, right?
Okay.
So, and this is the criterion and the review process that'll probably happen.
Just as an example, not for this particular project, but would that be an example for people of a decarbonizing operation?
Yeah, but I would still go back to scale because that might be $200,000. You know, think big, people. Think big.
Girl, I started thinking just now. Pardon me. I can catch myself. Okay, I have a text here that says, Mr. Newry, please ask your guests where the carbon now being released originally came from. Is that a question that needs to be reframed?
Well, I mean, so hydrocarbons came from the dinosaurs dying, and then they fell into the tar pits, and then they decayed, and they created this thing. While they were in the tar pits, the carbon was locked up. It wasn't causing no trouble until we go on and dig it out, put it through a chemical thing to make it a fuel, to put it then in a car.
As soon as Wilma asked Fred, why it taking us so long to get to the Grand Canyon, is when the problem started. Okay, we got about 5 minutes left. Texas says, yes, potholes are climate change. I wonder why it never affects the airport road, but Eastern Road getting climate effects every month. It does affect the airport road. Trust me, just trust differently. Me. Let's go to the phone line.
Excuse me, this next
absolutely.
Go ahead, Cody, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Newry, Ms. Green, and dear guests. I just wanted to say quickly, some of your guests is talking about the oil.
Yes.
Some of the oil being from the fossil fuels. I totally disagree with that. I mean, how it gets so deep into the earth. Me personally, I believe that the oil is the blood of the earth. You know, and I always used to wonder, way back in the time, when I see them extracting it so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
What purpose does it serve? Because everything here serves a purpose. What purpose does the oil serve in the earth? But that whole theory about the fossil fuels from dinosaurs and things, that's a bunch of foolishness. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, caller. On that note, I would like to ask about auxiliary resources. For instance, I come from the Bahamas. We have an oral tradition where we transfer knowledge orally, right? Our ancestors would have had all kinds of different solutions and protocols to deal with weather, understanding climate, and how weather changes around them. Is there funding available for small island developing states to do research where we attempt to sort of marry or validate indigenous traditional knowledge with contemporary science so we can extract which practices were valid and valuable and rooted in real indigenous knowledge and separate some of the things that are just like, I put my finger to the wind and say a word and I know what direction the wind coming from, right? Versus I know that there were men who could just read the stars and make it from Nassau to Abaco in the dark, right? Like, we know that that's a real thing. Are there resources available for some of the auxiliary discussion, the auxiliary research?
Yeah, I would say that there is something under the Paris Agreement called the Local and Indigenous Peoples Platform. We know for a fact that you know, we don't have indigenous people here. We know the history of what had happened.
Right, but with the amount of time that we've been here,
yes,
we can't designate a degree of indigeneity, right, and the local practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's that, like, that local practices and how we connect that to this issue of loss and damage. I would say we need to come back to have a conversation on this local and indigenous people platform.
All right. And today, representatives from the OPM's Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit have been discussing a new project, a Caribbean net zero and resilient private sector. You can contact the IDB country office at 396-7800. And you can contact the Environmental Advisory Unit at 702-5500 or cceau@bahamas.gov.bs.
This has been Guiding Radio AM. Again, thank you very much, Aaron. And thank you very much, New Bowl and Hamilton. Okay? Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.